All right, this last part is always my favorite part because it's, you know, it's kind of cool. I like it. Okay, Sarah Davis. Sarah, where you at? Oh, come on, Sarah. And this, again, we put the rules up. One long, one poem, two, top, one. Joan's not here. You'll get away with anything.
I'll stand by. Just tell me where it is. Okay. We good? All right. Thank you. This will not be too long. It's 22 lines. I know this because I just submitted it. So I had to change all the stanzas to be much more compact. It's the same words. I just moved them around. So I love the ocean. Many of us love the ocean. I'm not a beach person. I don't want to be there in the heat of the day. But there's just something mystical that a lot of us recognize. And the part I love is the shoreline. So ever since I was a toddler and I was let loose at the ocean, I would go straight into the water. It didn't matter what I was wearing. And I still do that. I was visiting my daughter in North Carolina. It was February. It had been so cold, and the day warmed. And I walked onto Carolina Beach, a very small beach, and I went straight into the water. So some of you might know how this feels. I don't know. It's called Pulse. Pulse. On this February day on Carolina Beach, the sun has warmed the air enough to walk along the shoreline. Already I am barefoot, leaving tracks on hard-packed sand, close, yet still not close enough to C's insistent pulse. Primeval instinct draws me seaward, beyond the depth of here and now. Obedient, I step into the chill, flinch, acclimate, begin to walk. Bound by gravities of sun and moon, I feel within two separate selves as ebb and flow of joy and pain. Are we not all creatures of the sea? We swim in womb before we enter light and air and take first separate breath. For just a few brief moments, I give myself to water's invitation until the bone-deep ache of cold takes me back to safe, familiar ground.
Next poet, this is, looks like Peter Webb. Peter Webb, where you at?
Right. Yeah, I think it's pretty good. Yeah.
All right. I just got one poem. It's called Frank O'Hara Speaks. Search for picture, portraiture, portraiture, as easy, as messy as you or I. Well, I say, I'll say, hardly able to build a coherent anymore. Well, a coherent thought, Peter said, watching James and the giant peach in the background. While typing this, Peter says, here I am, broken-hearted, unable to read poetry much at all, bucket o' jug, jug of blood. I am unable to read poetry much at all, have been told by my dad that a little poetry is nice, nice enough, right? Well, here I sit. Broken, earache, transcribe, whatever, you are able to stand. Write, write, whatever, you are able to stand. Read, readed, whatever. Jug, break, lug, heartache. Frank O'Hara and the fourful reimagining heartache. Little moments, he, we are still able to capture us. Like it's no surprise, right? All those Disney imitations. Clarity resigns, regains $100 million able to be made from a Disney animation. Robin J. Williams, jug bug. Frankie O, the finger. And like, as much, like I'm only willing to speak in poems to tree, as much so even being unable to lug up, drug up much stuff. Whatever I am able, a bell. Thanks.
Juan Steiner?
Ooh, hey, hello. One? Okay. This is Hollow Shoes, part one. Breathe a quick, drew but slow breaths at the sight of spinning lights, red and white, her running shoes taking away the birds in winter. A freight train shook the hospital room walls as she slept, fractured by stress, the doctor scurrying to find a pulse, anxious and waiting, the bed angled. Bree sat unaware, sliding back on her scratched arms. She passed out, died, crept back to the living for a second time. Toiling blips from the pulse monitors, Andrew the skip slumped into a chair with his while his limbs cramped without nicotine. Like velvet snakes, he found her sticky red hair along the country road where her legs gave way, falling into rocks of concussion because she couldn't handle her beats per minute. Andrew rode the elevator to his car and lit a cigarette. Anxious and knowing, her mother received his phone call and would soon be parking between the lines next to his half-rusted automobile. The snow melted off the windshield into a pool above the wiper as heat poured into Andrew, his anger boiling, cursing the fate of the run-down houses opposite the hospital, cursing the Ohio hills full of pressure, cursing mother and father, brother and sister, teachers, principals, five church spires in the valley. He cursed the police, and he cursed himself, knowing his anger boiled for him alone. Andrew the skip loved the woman in the hospital who said, "I will run any pace I want. Never again will I see them, the trainers who hold me back." She hoped the words would make her faster. Anxious and knowing, Andrew the skip drove out of the parking lot, down the wet blacktop, regret already building, but overpowered by feelings of betrayal. He sparked another cigarette as smoke circled through caged air. Thank you.
Mary Soonley.
Hello. I had a poetry book published, and it's an epic fantasy, sort of like Games of Thrones or something, but not at all like that, but it's in verse. So this is one less than a page poem from it. Companionship. Fall, winter, spring, the birth of their first child, quiet days that quickly slip behind them, his hand reaching for hers after supper is cleared, her arm reaching for him in her sleep. A strategic marriage, a political marriage, unasked for, unnegotiated, this friendship. Shazia softly singing to their soft-cheeked son in her own language, the words unknown to Zhao, but the string of sounds stored in his memory so that one night, far from her, on the eve of his second war, he will remember each rolling syllable the way she smelled, his son's hand fisted round his finger.
This next poet, I think, is Paul, but it's a.k.a. Hex Dingo. Paul.
It's a Uppergate alias. I have 20 lines for you this evening. Five, four-line scenes, small break. Under the title of Incoming Toaster. A $3 cover to up an ante had whited thee out before it could fetch. Leave joy alone and cancel religion. Attaboy windward, Bukowski adrift. Anselm, there is no God yet, vitamin. Egregiously task the innuendo. Half again saddened to be forgetful. Appear as you define drug from a cave. Homeless alumni search all of egg thrust. Excluded waste can slip past a month. Should it revamp and file an accomplice, the too erroneous is may scalp work. I start a line before you imagine trumpetless inner hive continuum. Subject to charge, merciful compaction. Eco-friendly, potable elephant. Penniless have ye crab leg, one pit night. Stiff the chauffeur, a sawbuck at Murray. To gaggle mid-flock, round PNC Park. Turn somewhat year-end divided as thus.
I wrote this poem with my friend Michael in mind one evening. And what happened was they followed me around. They did a documentary for Toronto. They followed me for a year and a half with a camera. And what it was not that I was a good poet. That wasn't it. It was what I did in my life. I was a homicide detective, narcotics officer, boxing, crazy things, you know. But it's hard to describe to you. When you see TV, you watch 1 hour. It's called 48 hours. It's really not what it's like. It's more like 72 hours you're out there, and it's long, and it's hard, and it's not 72 hours. It goes on for weeks and weeks. You wake up at night and you rethink and rethink and rethink. And you, what did I do? What did I see? And everything has certain madness to it, you know? And just briefly, what they did was they filmed this thing. There was a little girl that was killed over in Rank and Braddock area. And they filmed that. We went to the scene, and I have this group of people that actually, they're other detectives, judges, and they filmed us reading, okay, poetry, and then they showed the documentary. So Michael had to go see this twice. And some of this, I didn't even want to see it twice. Okay, but it has a certain some of it's not upbeat, you know what I mean? It's not like you're going to do cartwheels and thinking you're eating cotton candy. You know. Write the poem for us. He said, had to leave. I couldn't listen to your poetry. You tread in deep water, and I couldn't hear another poem about the sickness, madness. And I know you've seen a lot, but I didn't want to hear. I thought of writing about a bell jar, maybe a steamboat, or maybe write about the old man in the sea. I want to tell you about a lie once told twice becomes a truth. Hard to understand any of this in a world that justifies truth by holding someone's head underwater. I want to tell him about the detectives, how they told me about the old man they arrested who raped his niece. How he painted his face like some mad aborigine. How he took a crucifix and violated the innocence. How could I write this poem and find any beauty where there is evil? I wanted somehow to place my hands over their eyes and take away the image of the horror. I wanted to cleanse their souls. They asked me to write about the man that hurt the child. Dog, You can write the story. Tell everyone how we took him to jail with the war paint on his face. Tell everyone what the man had done. I said, I cannot ring a bell nor shout from rooftops. The image is yours, and the paint is like carrying a cross. I told the man, it would be easy to write about flowers and blue skies if you live in a garden. Easy to write if you've never seen or heard, but once you've treaded in deep water, you can never quite swim back to the shore. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for that question. See you next week.